This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into 5-on-3, WFUV's best if only hockey podcast, joined by a packed crew today. We have Sophia Smith, Lydia Perner, special guest, and Ryan Deptula joining me, Grace McCarron, to talk all things Rangers, Islanders, Devils. We have to talk about Quinn Hughes. We haven't had an episode since he was traded to Minnesota. We got a couple other storylines to get to. So let's just hop right in, Lydia. We have only a little bit of time with you, but we're going to jump right into the New York Rangers, who had a back-to-back Monday and Tuesday. And they would drop both of those, losing to Anaheim in Chris Kreider and Jacob Trouba's return, and also being shut out by the Canucks on Tuesday. Now, Lydia and Sophia were both at the Ducks game, Lydia covering and Sophia in the stands. Guys, before we get into the Rangers play, talk a little bit about the emotions and what welcoming Kreider and Trouba back was like. Lydia, you want to go first?
Yeah, well, first off, I wasn't supposed to be on this podcast, but it was just too stacked of a crew to not be on it, so I had to insert myself into it. So thanks for letting me on, guys. But yeah, Grace, you're also forgetting the big storyline of Saturday of Will Cooley playing 200 NHL games.
How could I
forget? And I knew you didn't forget about that. You were just waiting for me to mention it, because I would never let you forget that. But yeah, the Chris Kreider, Jacob Trouba return, it was honestly, after the fact, like seeing all the video edits of Kreider and like I think the New York Post content people posted like the video of Kreider tapping on Trouba because they were in the starting lineup together along with Frank Vatrano and Ryan Strome. Really cool thing that Coach Quenneville did for them. But it was just seeing Kreider in orange was so weird. He asked the media post game to do the availability outside the away locker room, which is usually never happens, but just pretty much all of the Rangers reporters, minus a couple of us, went, you know, to them. Then you walk out of the locker room after the game and Kreider and Mika are right there talking it up because Mika, well, he was a healthy scratch in that game, which happens. Rules are rules. But, yeah, honestly, just the tribute, everything, it was really good to see Chris Kreider again. And the Rangers, he was such a good Ranger, 13 years, you know, 880-something games. It's tough to see the fact that he couldn't remain a New York Ranger because of the lack of, or I guess the throwing too many new no-movement clauses and no-trade clauses out there. But I'm glad that he's kind of found his footing with the Ducks.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad that he went to Anaheim. I feel like both him and Trouba have, like, found a home there. The Mika stuff, I have my own beef with, because I just feel like it was just like the complete, I know like the timing, obviously it was just like the complete wrong timing for that to happen, because like they, like the two of them were like the Rangers like core for so long, and then like he comes back and then he gets scratched. But I mean, I like went to warm-ups and I sat like on the Duck side, and like there was just so many Rangers fans, everyone in Kreider jerseys. Like it really just shows like how much he meant to this team, and like the cheers from the crowd during the warm-ups, and then like obviously the standing ovation during the tribute. It meant a lot to me, obviously, as a huge Kreider fan, but like the fan base, like especially seeing after the way that they treated him last year, and like they wanted him to be traded, like he didn't have a good year last year, injuries, whatever. And obviously, like you said, Lydia, like 13 years with the Rangers, he's going to have a very huge impact on this team, and like seeing everyone there like really show their love and support for him was just like really nice to see. And then obviously Trouba too. I just thought it was funny.
Tribute was so disrespectful.
Yeah, that, I know.
Because they did it the next media timeout, like right after.
It was like a quarter of the length.
It was a quarter of the length, and like people just like, because no one was over Kreider yet at that point.
Yeah.
They did it so close together. And like, we were like up on the bridge, like that was so disrespectful.
But yeah, it was a rough game for like that reason. And then also the game itself was just rough. And I was there on Tuesday night too, which was like, it was worse. So yeah, bad week for the Rangers and for me, but.
yeah, getting into the results for the Rangers this week, losing 4-1 to Anaheim Monday, And then the 3-0 shutout by the dead last in the league, Vancouver Canucks, on Tuesday on the back-to-back. I wrote down a couple of fun facts that Molly Walker, who we love and cherish around here, tweeted after that. Seventh shutout loss of the season for them, sixth at home. They're now 0-5-1 on the second game of the back-to-backs this year. Ryan, I'll throw this next one to you. Their next game is tonight in St. Louis at 8 o'clock Eastern. Obviously, coming off a tough couple of games, they had, a couple of days, or well, they had yesterday basically, to kind of regroup. What do you need to see from them going forward to kind of get out of this skid?
Well, first of all, I think I'm gonna go back to a second because I'm a
Yeah.
devout Kreider fan, so I'm
Yeah,
gonna
yeah,
I do have to give my
yeah.
thoughts
Grace, you're
on.
outnumbered here. It's three, it's yeah, three to
Yeah,
one.
I know. Yeah, I'm a
It's all
huge
right.
Rangers fan.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so Chris Kreider actually is the only modern jersey that I had, so now I have no jersey of a player who plays on the team. It's just so devastating. If he was my favorite player, he's my guy, and
Oh
to see how he
man.
was treated by the fans last season. I mean, it was kind of reasonable, but like. In retrospect, it kind of was not at all. But like, with what people knew at the time and what people on Twitter, how they like to act and always, just not care about any sort of excuse and just want to see their team win. They don't really care about the specifics, or a lot of them don't really have emotional attachments the way that, a lot of the more real fans do. So to see him go out, to see him come back, and to know that he kind of got the better of us too, which is kind of a good thing. Like we're kind of, he went to, greener pastures a little bit, so. It was great for him, but it hurt, for me.
Yeah.
So yeah. All right. So going back to what we need to see out of him, moving it to the next matchup. I mean, we had a couple of good offensive games like in the last, but like when we played, the Canadiens, that was a pretty fun game. That was like one of our most complete. Well, not really, because we gave up four games, but it's very enjoyable to watch us on offense. But it hasn't really been enjoyable to watch us on offense, like at all, like not even close. I just feel like. Our team is something that, like, what you look for in the next matchup is such a toss-up because it feels like we always fall short in ways that we haven't seen quite yet. But I mean, I think we need to just see some goals because you see Igor, he's pissed off. I think we need to see some sort of offensive motion, some sort of change in the speed at which we play. I feel like we're a little too old to be not this good. It's just, and. Future matchups, I'd like to see a little bit more speed. We need to find a direction and where we want to go.
Yeah, I agree with everything that Ryan just said. You pretty much like nailed everything in terms of Saturday's game. Going back to Montreal, the Rangers go down 3-0 in that game, but the first goal that the Canadiens scored was their first shot on goal. Like, they absolutely dominated the first 10 minutes of the game. I believe the Canadiens scored like 6-4 at like 6:40 left in the first. And then, like, the three goals, like the Jacquet goal, and I forget who has scored that third goal, but it's like you're kind of like, what's going on? Because again, the Rangers had actually, like, Ryan, I know you were starting to say like, oh, that was a complete game. It actually was a complete game despite them giving up three in the first.
That's what I
But
was thinking.
yeah, and Sullivan kind of talked about that in the post game. He was like, he was asked, did you think about using your timeout? Did you think about pulling Igor? And he said no, because I talked to the other coaches on the bench after that third goal goes in. We didn't really think any of the goals were Igor's fault, and we didn't think our team was playing bad. It's just credit to Montreal, they capitalized on their opportunities. But then you get the power play. Noah Labba gets the power play goal. You get the Panarin penalty shot, which, Canadiens fans, they can complain all they want. Panarin was absolutely in and got spun around by Noah Dobson, old friend of the Islanders, Grace. So that was absolutely the right call on the ref's part. And Panarin's the guy you want in a shootout situation because he's nails. But Sullivan also said in that for that game specifically, like going into the first intermission down 3-0, horrible. 3-1, still not great. 3-2, now you feel like you're in the game. So then the Rangers come out of that, but then Josh Anderson from Lane Hudson gets the slap shot, and you're like, all right, so the whatever magic was happening is over. But then Will Cooley, 200 games, gets a goal and assist there. He gets the third goal. JT Miller gets the fourth goal, and then the overtime winner. So that was just a really complete game by the Rangers. And despite it being close in the standings, or not standings, sorry, in the scoreboard, I think they actually played really well. And that was, I think, their fourth overtime game in a row at Madison Square Garden, because you go back to the Stars, the Golden Knights, the Avalanche, and then the Canadiens. But then going into this week, Monday and Tuesday, statistically, and how many times, Grace McCarron, have I said this year? Statistically, they won both those games.
Right.
When you look at the expected goals, but they didn't score. And Monday, you go into the locker room and you try and figure out like what to do. And I went to Gavrikov, and Gavrikov was like, I think we actually like played a really good game. I think if we play like that, like we did against the Ducks, tomorrow and in the future, we'll put ourselves in a good position here. And then they do play well yesterday. They don't score. And then Panarin post game, I kind of like was like, I don't even know what to ask at this point. But Panarin's a pretty easy guy to talk to, and he goes, yeah, honestly, I think like the key to getting ourselves in these games is to score three or four goals in the first period. And I was like, I mean,
That'll
I
do it.
can't swear on this podcast, but like, no, of course, yeah, score three goals. The term I'm trying
That's what
to
I was th that's what I was
say.
thinking
Yeah.
when you asked me,
That's
what do you want to see in the future
good.
matchup? I was like, we got to score goals. Like, you
Yeah,
just
he's
need
like,
to
I don't want to be playing from behind in the first period. I want to score three or four goals, and I want the power play to click. And I'm like, you got it down. So I can't complain there. But yeah, it's just for me, the one issue is they're playing well, but they're a little hesitant on the shot. And the difference between half a second is what allows the goalie to get set in the NHL. And that's what Demko was allowed to do. That's what Dostal was allowed to do. I think Dostal played out of his mind on Monday. I think Demko and the Rangers didn't really test him. They were shooting a lot down low. I would like to see him shoot a bit more up high. But they're getting those opportunities, but they need to cash in. Miller was talking about that. Like, you need to bear down on our chances and put the puck in the back of the net, or else, this shutout streak is going to continue.
I think that on Monday, like they started the game off with that like momentum from Saturday, and it was a really good start to the game, and then they fall down 2-1, and then they kind of like the third period, I think it was just like they couldn't even get into the offensive zone. Like, and then they didn't pull Igor until there was like a minute and a half left, just because they didn't have the puck, and it was just like, how is this possible? And then like the offense obviously has been a huge issue this season, and like I just don't remember a time when like the entire team offense was clicking. Like, I feel like last week, and like it was the defense. Like, it was like Gavrikov was scoring, and like we were getting goals from Borgen. Or I just don't remember like when the top six and the bottoms, like I don't know. It's just like it's all coming from like one place at a time. And like, like, I know that's not their job to score goals, but like, when was the last time the bottom six, the fourth line, was really getting into it? Like, in the beginning of the season, Carrick was scoring. Like, it just seems like it's not coming from anywhere. Like, and especially the top six, who Panarin, like Trocheck, these guys are not doing what. And like, Lydia, I know you're saying like it's that they're playing well, they're just getting a little bit unlucky, or like waiting. I just feel like the passes aren't connecting. Like, the power play is just, how is there not, why has there been no changes to the power play when it's clearly not clicking? They're like 0 for 25 or more. It's just, you obviously expect more from everybody, but particularly the first line, top six. I don't know. Everyone's just been kind of lackluster, and like the Vancouver game was just sad, in my opinion, because you're playing a you they play the Blackhawks, they get shut out by the Blackhawks, last team in the league, and then it happens again against Vancouver, 3-0 both games. Like, something has to change here.
I think that with just obviously Adam Fox going down, the power plays looked pretty much been in shambles. But again, like, they are getting good looks. But my pro biggest problem with the power play right now with the five forwards is I think the person who's playing the point, so whether it's Panarin or Mika, two phenomenal players, but they're a little more hesitant than they usually are, because they're not used to playing defense, and they're not used to, if a shot gets blocked. And Adam Fox is going back on a 2-on-1. Well, he knows how to play a 2-on-1 better than Mika Zibanejad and Artemi Panarin. So they're trying to play a little more low risk. That's why for weeks it's kind of confused me why Sullivan hasn't given Gavrikov a look or Scott Morrow a look on that unit one. I think like as a coach, you're like, yeah, they're getting good looks, but like something's got to give, and nothing has. Unit two is the only one that's cashed in recently, and it was that goal from the second unit from Noah Labba against the Canadiens. So yeah, to me, you need a defenseman on that unit, on the first unit, because that's so the like if you look at the Vancouver game, The problem with the Vancouver game is the Rangers go down 1-0 2 minutes in the game because Matthew Robertson gets up, like, picked by the linesman. And, like, sure, Quick, like, could have maybe played it a bit harder, but if you look at that whole play, like, Quick was not set for a breakaway. Quick was set for a shot to the outside. So that's why it looked like he didn't even try on the save. But it was just such a unlucky play. And honestly, like, hockey is a sport, like, they have to do something about that. Like, refs kind of directly causing goals. Like, look, I'm not blaming the linesman because he's part of the play, but, like, in soccer, it's like there's a rule, if the ref gets hit and then, like, the ball changes possession, like, it's a dead play. I think hockey should adapt something
It
like
looked a
that.
little pick and roll action for
Yeah,
the
imagine this is game 7 and that's the goal, like, that your team
it was
loses on.
brutal.
Like, yeah, and so I just think, like, it was super unlucky they go down 1-0. And then it's like it's the chasing the game aspect. Chasing the game, playing offense when you're chasing the game, playing offense when you're at 0-0, like, or just tied in general or up are two, like, completely different things. And the problem is when you go down 1-0 like that, it sucks. And then you're kind of like, all right, hockey gods, puck luck, not on our side right now. And then nothing's going in. And then Jonathan Quick lets up an iffy one in the second to go 2-0. So it's just that game was just a for to me, like, a series of
But
unfortunate
the
events.
worst part about it is that these games that they're losing aren't even like super high scoring.
Yeah.
Like the third goal then was an empty netter, and then on Monday it was basically 2-1.
That was a 2-1
And
game Monday, yeah.
it's like all you have to do is score 3 goals, which is like the Panarin thing about get like scoring more in the first period. Like if you like they're not even scoring one. They're getting shut. That's the sixth shutout at home of the season in 17 home games. And like I said, like the stars are not showing up, specifically Panarin, because he was like the Pastrnak, the Celebrini, like he was the player that was going to make the plays and be dynamic. And like I just it hasn't happened this season for him. He has, like, barring that, like, small right after he shaved his head and then he came back and he was like back to his like star self. But then since then I feel like I haven't really seen much out of him, and it's confusing.
I really don't think with the Rangers offense you can blame one player
No,
because
I don't think you can either. I'm just saying that they don't have a star.
no, I get what you're saying. Like Panarin, like he's our big contract guy. He's our guy that's supposed to be putting up the big points. But the problem that Sullivan's also dealing with is like Panarin in particular, like I think has played with different line mates like every game. And there's been no like stick to, one combination. Sullivan's still trying to look for, the proper top six. And even, our best line for a couple weeks was Cooley Berard, or yeah, Cooley Lava Berard. Berard gets sent down because he hadn't had a point in 11 games. It is what it is, but it's like, yeah, the top guys aren't necessarily showing up, but like, it's not like my big thing is it's not like last year. Last year, like, it looked to me like there was a culture problem and they didn't care. This year, they care so much that they're getting frustrated, like especially the top six, especially JT Miller, Mika Zibanejad, Vincent Trocheck, or Artemi Panarin, when the puck isn't going to the back of the net, because that's been their MO like their whole career. So I think that's part of it's a frustration thing. Like when I was walking over to JT yesterday, I like hear him. I think he was answering one of Molly's questions. And he's like, I mean, I'm not mad. I'm just pissed. Like it's that type of thing. It's you're just frustrated because the puck is not going in the net, but. Sophia and Ryan, like you guys can both attest, like when the Rangers are winning, like they're winning by like they're scoring 5 goals. So it's
Yeah.
like, what's going on here? But
I feel
yeah,
like I'm not
I don't
mad, I'm
know.
just pissed. It's such a
Yeah.
good, that's a great quote.
I think I don't know if the camera was there. I don't think the camera was there, so I don't know if we have that on camera, but
I
just
saw the
my first
quote
question.
somewhere on Twitter.
I think it was Molly's quote, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel like what you were saying about the lack of continuity is something you both said. Something about, how they're being confused and how they look confused when they lose, which is kind of a horrible sign, to be honest. But for any team, I mean, I've been a fan of many sports, and usually there's like, I'm not mad, I'm just pissed. It's kind of, I mean, as much as you want to give them credit for the fact that they're trying, the fact that they're confused about why they lose and how there's like a common theme of, we just need to start scoring goals, or that we're getting lucky and we're actually playing good games, but it's actually been like, we're actually a good portion away into the season and we're actually not winning games. So we're kind of getting to that point where you'd like to see more of an identification of a problem, unless you want to ride the "we're actually just getting really unlucky" for the whole season train. I think we're gonna. I'm not quite sure. I think the lack of continuity in lines is a good point, but I'm not quite sure where we're going. where to identify the problem.
Well, Gabe Perl will crack back into the lineup tonight, I believe. And so, I mean, Offman was up for a bit and he was healthy scratch. So who knows what lines will look like. Panarin might be sick tonight. He's just, that sickness is going around that locker room. Talk to Vincent Trocheck about that. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see what the Rangers have in store. Blues tonight on the road. So
Yeah.
road has been their friend for the record, but I don't know. We'll see.
True. All right. Well, thank you, Lydia, for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
Course, anytime. As we said, Rangers next game tonight in St. Louis at 8 p.m. But now we have to turn it over to Long Island. New York Islanders drop a pretty bad loss in Detroit. Well, not a great loss in Detroit. Nothing to freak out about. But on Tuesday, they did not get the season sweep of Detroit. They beat them the first two meetings. Did not obviously get that season sweep with that loss, but Alex DeBrincat, 2 goals in the third, puts him at 20 goals on the year. So I'm fine with it. It was not. I watched this whole game. It was not the prettiest hockey game by the Islanders that I've ever seen. Especially because they've had some games like that this season that they figure out a way to win. They did not do that on Tuesday, but you know what? I'm not going to be greedy. Because they did beat the Lightning in a shootout on Saturday, thanks to Emil Heinemann, who is a godsend for the Island. Like, I don't even, Sophia, you've obviously seen a lot of him being on the beat. Like, I don't even know where this came from. Like, I don't think anybody, when they did that trade for Noah Dobson with Montreal, I don't think anybody's thought of this as the, oh, Emil Heinemann, nice pickup by the Islanders. It was the Noah
No,
Dobson
it's
trade.
funny because I didn't even really know who he was, and then like it felt like every time I was there, it was always him scoring. Like I would watch the like notification come on my phone. It's Heinemann who scored, and like he's obviously been a great pickup for them this season.
Yeah, he's been great on the shootout. I believe that's now at least his second shootout winner for the team. And then he also scored against Detroit on Tuesday. Obviously, could not get the win there. But Sophia, want to quickly, we have to make a new Zoom meeting before we get into the rest of this, but wanted to quickly ask you, Islanders face the Canucks, who obviously are still in town tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Canucks, as we mentioned, near the bottom of the league. What do you need to see from the Islanders tomorrow to kind of bounce back from that, not great loss on Tuesday, get the taste out of their mouth?
I mean, they've struggled at, like with I know that the Red Wings have been good this season, but like they've struggled against like the worser teams, I feel like. I mean, I
Yeah.
feel like they play really well. Like they beat the Avs, like, and they beat the Lightning twice, like, or three times. It just feels like they fall down to their competition a little bit. So I would like to see just like play your game. Like the expectation, you know what you guys are capable of. I is Sorokin playing, do we know?
I think he should be.
Yeah, I mean they have been such an entertaining and exciting and surprising team this season that it against this Vancouver team like should not. It was like I thought that the Rangers were going to beat Vancouver on Tuesday, and then they didn't. But the Islanders have been better, more consistent, and like obviously they know how to score goals. So I'm not too concerned about them, and I have high hopes for the game. Yeah.
Ryan, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I do. Unfortunately, yeah, they're going to take care of it. I mean, they're not the Rangers. I mean, maybe I'm a Rangers fan. I feel like Lydia has more optimism about his own team. But yeah, I think you guys got it. I think this that they're a horrible team. It's self-admitted horrible team. You know, they're tanking. They're in the tank mode. Like, this is a Islanders team that's kind of been rolling. And I'm back in Connecticut, and we kind of have this AHL beef between with the Wolfpack and the Bridgeport Islanders, formerly Bridgeport Sound Tigers, which were a much better name. But
So much better.
and there's a couple Islanders fans out here who let you hear it. So yeah, I know they got it. I think they're gonna handle that fine. I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, another piece of news with the Islanders, Bo Horvat will not play tomorrow, but it appears as though there's a chance he plays in Buffalo on Saturday. Patrick Waugh was kind of non-committal about that, but he is on the way back, just will not be playing tomorrow against his former
Good.
team. Unfortunately, that would have been really cool. I will be there tomorrow in the stands, but Emma will have your coverage for WFUV of Islanders Canucks. All right, now turning things over to the last local team, the New Jersey Devils, currently sitting at 19-14-1. Good win over the Vegas Golden Knights on the road last night in the shootout. That was a late one. Personally, could not stay awake for that entire game, but obviously, the story with the Devils as of late has been the injuries. It feels like there's, it comes a certain time on the calendar where every New Jersey Devil is getting injured. And, we know about Jack Hughes. That's become a little bit of a thing on hockey social media. How did he do this to his hand? Got a bunch of other guys as well. But Brett Pesce made his return after 2 months out with a hand injury last night. Head coach Sheldon Keefe was complimentary of his play last night, helped kill a couple penalties. So that was a good one, but obviously they still are pretty down for the count, some of their stars. But one thing that I found fun, I guess is, a strong word, but funny about the Devils yesterday is that apparently on the TNT pregame show before the game in Vegas, Luke Hughes kind of revealed something about Jack Hughes's timeline, saying he should be back pretty soon, which is nobody knew that that was, it was kind of unclear to everybody. There was no, not that there is a confirmed date on when Jack Hughes will be coming back, but we got a little glimpse into things from his brother Luke. I thought that was pretty funny. But hey, good for Devils fans to be hearing that. So obviously coming off the big win last night, they continued this West Coast run against Utah tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. What have you guys, obviously they're kind of in a weird spot right now with all these injuries. You can't really expect them to look like the normal Devils. What have you guys thought of them thus far? And especially after this great win last night.
Yeah, I did too. I was the reporter for two Devils games, one where they lost to the Lightning and the one where they beat the Ducks. The Lightning, I mean, obviously this is a hospital team, kind of, not kind of at all. They're a hospital team. But the Lightning, a kind of an inevitable loss, in my opinion. I'm a huge fan of the Lightning team, which is like kind of like sacrilegious because I'm supposed to kind of hate them, but like I'm just a fan of how they play. They're just a great team. But anyway, regardless, they had a huge, win against the Ducks when where a lot of people like straight coming off the bench because Simone Nemec went out or whatever like that day when in insert and in practice the previous day, and basically they had their whole like hospital squad coming in, and they had like some I forgot his name, but he was like someone who comes off Lamaco. Yeah, he put came in and had like two assists. He played extremely well, and it was probably one of their grittiest, like most important wins of the season, and I think it kind of showed something with the team that there's a lot of doubt. When people get injured, you just start losing, and nobody wants to pull the injury card out like forever. So you're kind of like, you get mad at certain players. But when you come out with, gritty wins like that against good teams, it shows you that maybe the winning is something deeper within the team. So I kind of have some sort of belief in this team that somehow winning is kind of infested within all layers of the, the program, which is a good thing. And I feel like, even though they just lost to the Canucks, like I'm just, when they win, they're kind of a when they lose their hospital team, and when they win, I'm just impressed by it. So I don't know. I know I'm not a Devils fan. I just report like objectively, actually not objectively because I'm don't like them, but also, and it's not objective at all. But actually, being objective, I do like them. I think they showed it a lot of heart, and maybe the game I reported on with the Ducks, and I think that they're like their team has responded relatively well to being like completely decimated. So I see a lot of hope for them, to be honest.
I mean, obviously, like they kind of hit a bump when Jack got injured, and they fell down in the standings. But now, looking at the standings, now they're second, the second wild card spot. So, yeah, I agree with that. That they've dealt, they've fared fine with the injuries. This is kind of just like par for the course for the Devils. Obviously, like they've had injury issues the last few years, but looking at the standings now, like the Islanders have made a home for themselves in the top three, which is fascinating. And then Philly is third somehow. Like, how did that
That's
happen?
crazy.
The Devils are, I feel like we're not going to see like their full potential until everyone comes back, if that happens. But like in the beginning of the season, they were obviously like a force to be reckoned with. So
Checking in, actually, nice segue there, Sophia. Checking in on the Metro. Hurricanes at the top, 46 points, and then the Islanders are 5 points behind them, in second place with 41. And then Flyers and Caps tied for third. Caps were sitting at the top there for like a few days, and now they're suddenly struggling a tad. But Emma Leonardi is somewhere, shaking her head at this. They lost to the Wild, I believe, a couple nights ago.
I'm like confused again about how Philly is somehow third because
I don't.
I remember saying last year that like I expected them to be good this season, and I feel like they haven't really made waves, but somehow now looking at this, they have 40 points, so.
I feel like they were pretty not good for a while. Like I was solidly like, okay, they're not really going to be a problem. And now all of a sudden they're
Yeah, I had no inkling
okay.
of a good Flyers team in 2025, 2026 season. I was like,
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on here, but enjoy it.
Yeah, and then Devils, as we said, 39 points just behind Caps and Flyers in fourth, and then the Rangers, second to last, only a little bit worse is the Blue Jackets with 34. The Rangers have 36 points. So, little Metro check-in before we turn it over to the third Hughes brother, who we have not yet mentioned on this podcast, who's probably the biggest topic right now. Quinn Hughes traded last Friday night to the Minnesota Wild. From the Vancouver Canucks. The Canucks lose their captain, kind of the heart and soul of the team. I mean, I've seen a lot of Canucks fans on the internet in bad shape, and I don't blame them at all. We kind of had an inkling this was coming, maybe. I wasn't surprised that the Wild got him. I thought like, oh, the Devils maybe would make a run, and they, according to insiders, they did make a run at him, but traded to the Wild in exchange for Marco Rossi, Ziv Boyum, Liam Ogren, and a 2026 first round draft pick. So pretty good trade, I'd say. What do you guys just round table? Obviously, this is almost a week ago now. It actually, funnily enough, happened a few hours after we recorded 5 on 3 last week. So that was such convenient timing. But what did you guys think of this trade? Obviously made a lot of waves around the league.
I was really surprised about the fact that it was the Wild. I felt like he was gonna stay in Vancouver. Like I know that the team was struggling a lot, but again, like he was the heart and soul of the team. He was the captain, and the fact that it wasn't New Jersey as well. Like it was just like the Wild kind of came out of nowhere, in my opinion. And that team seems to be putting like all their eggs in one basket, or like they not even like. They are clearly going for it, is what I'm saying. Like they put their money in Kaprizov, and now they have Hughes, and like I'm excited to see where this team goes in the postseason because I feel like they have a lot of potential, and now they like have made their team infinitely better. I also think that it's interesting that both Quinn Hughes and then Boeum like scored in their first games with the teams. I don't know. I thought that he was going to stay in Vancouver, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I think one thing that was funny is that I was covering the Devils game like immediately after, and like the reporters were just itching to ask everyone about Quinn Hughes. And it made me realize in my young career as reporting that these people have no media training because they were asking them, like, what did it take a weight off your locker room? And some people were able to lock in and be like, oh, I don't think we worry about that. And then some people were like, oh, yeah, I think a couple people were worried about getting traded. So, and then Luke Hughes was saying basically like, oh yeah, at some point in our career, I think we really want to play with each other, which is something that you don't normally hear from players to admit that there's like a desire to play for a different team. I thought he was going to go to the Devils to react to the trade. I actually kind of thought that was a, maybe I'm just a Twitter guy, but I kind of thought that was a good deal. And the Wild were like a complete surprise to me. So, I mean, I feel like they came out of nowhere too, but I think it's fun too. I think they're, like you said, they're completely going for it, which I've been a fan of the Minnesota Wild, partly because of their logo, mostly because of Matt Zuccarello. Matt Zuccarello, one of my favorite players as a youngin. But either way, yeah, I think they came out of nowhere. But I think it's really fun, and like, I honestly think with the addition of Quinn Hughes, it's not like they're not too far from it. They're pretty good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Definite. Like, I don't know what it is about the Wild. Like, they're just fun. Like, something about them. When they gave Kaprizov that deal, I was like, wow. that kind of sent more shockwaves throughout the league, and now it seems like they really are going for it. So great for them. Obviously, for on the other side for Vancouver, it's pretty bad. Quinn Hughes was their all-time leader in points by a defenseman. He got that mark in October. Other teams that were in the mix, we obviously mentioned the Devils. They had been in the mix the whole time. The Red Wings, apparently the Rangers too. That would have been crazy.
That would have been crazy.
That would have been like, even as a not a Rangers person at all, like that would have been that would have been really fun.
Like
But
seeing Fox and Quinn Hughes together would have been so good.
that would have been sick.
Very
But
fun.
apparently they were in the mix. Obviously, did not make it there. But and then to some degree, the Hurricanes and the Sabres, which okay. But anyway, yeah, that was the big news from the
Correct
league
me if I'm
last
wrong,
week.
but wasn't there kind of news with the Quinn Hughes deal that he was not committing to an extension with any team?
Yeah,
So I
that's
feel
what
like
I read that too.
I read and that is a huge impact to where you trade and who's going to trade for you, because he's there for what, 1 year or 2 years maybe, but he's not committing to an extension to any team, which severely kills like most of the leverage that the Canucks have, because they're like trading a rental essentially, which also makes me feel like it feels like with Luke Hughes talking about how they really want to play with each other and how he's openly not committing to an extension, it feels like the writing's on the wall a little bit.
Yeah, then it's like if you're the Devils, like how do you not leap on that immediately once he's back on the market? But another little bit of around the league talk. We talked last week about the goalie for goalie trade with Tristan Jarry and Stuart Skinner being traded,
Another
switching
one like came
teams.
out of nowhere, I feel
That
like.
was a weird one. I personally have been begging the Oilers to change at goalie since 2 years ago, when they lost the first cup to the Panthers. I've been asking for this for ages because I just think it's preposterous that they didn't do anything. But Connor McDavid needs a cup. I know not everyone loves the Oilers. I personally love watching the Oilers. I don't have any issue with them, mostly because the Islanders got their first win of the season off the Oilers, so I'm okay with them at the moment. But this was kind of, it seemed like the thing that they really just needed to change because Skinner was so up and down, especially in the playoffs, which is not something you want to deal with in the playoffs, especially if you get to a game seven of the Cup final. But Tristan Jarry is the answer for Edmonton, it seems. And I'd like to, neither of you guys were on last week, is that right? Right. So we could talk a little bit about that because I have been thinking about this trade a lot. What did you guys think of this? And then obviously they faced Edmonton and Pittsburgh played each other on Tuesday. So we can talk a little bit about that game as well. But what did you guys think of this?
I
I
was
feel
just
like,
like,
oh, you got that. You got that.
how, like, I don't know. I'm just like, how is Tristan Jarry the answer to your problem? Like, I know that Skinner was like not good, like just plain not good. And like, I don't know. I'm like, McDavid, how can you have McDavid and then not win a cup? And it's simply because you don't have the goalie. That's like the only reason. The rest of this team is unbeatable. And then like, Skinner was just absolutely not the answer. So like I think that Jarry is better than Skinner, but I don't know if he's like, I don't know. Because it's also like once you hit a certain point, like the team can mask the issues of the goalie. But so like maybe like Jarry is just like that one step up that he has to be in order for the Oilers to like take that extra step. But no, yeah, it was just kind of like who wins this kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I could agree. It's kind of a band-aid. But they're kind of in we need to keep Connor McDavid mode, which and like we not that not that he's like imminently gonna leave, but it's kind of like we need to win with Connor McDavid mode, or else people are gonna get mad at us mode, which is true. And like you said, how are you gonna not win a goal with Connor McDavid because your goalie is the only problem? Obviously, I feel like most great teams that win usually have a great goalie, and it's kind of a common thread. And obviously the team can mask it, and you kind of have to play complementary hockey between the goalie and all that. So I'm honestly like kind of high on the trade for the Oilers, because I thought you said the point perfectly that maybe he's just that much better to where like yes, they can mask their goalie, but they couldn't mask Skinner, but they could mask this a little bit better. But you have a hard time thinking like this is the guy that's gonna take him home. Can't not
Yeah,
quite there with that yet.
you kind of with the Oilers, like we kind of know that Florida was their kryptonite the past 2 years. Like, there's no reason they couldn't have won the past two cups if Florida hadn't been so good. And now Florida is very injured. We don't really know what they're gonna turn out as. So that was the move for Edmonton. We'll see how this shapes up for them, but they faced the Penguins Tuesday night. The Oilers won that one 6-4, so they scored six goals on their former goalie Stuart Skinner, which is just really awkward. But another storyline from that game, perhaps a little more important, is Leon Draisaitl reached 1,000 career points on Tuesday against Pittsburgh with his assist. 103rd player in NHL history to reach that mark, and the first German-born player. So great for Leon Draisaitl, great player, lots of fun. And you know what? Good for the Oilers. But Tristan Jarry still gave up four goals. Like, it's not, it was interesting. That game was interesting to me
Yeah,
because.
also like the video of them all coming off the bench to hug Draisaitl, and then Skinner is just like there.
It was so
Like,
upsetting.
it's
I was like, I
devastating.
was like getting upset. I'm like, I don't even care about these teams, but I was like, this is really devastating. A little bit too much empathy there, but I think that's just about going to do it for this episode of 5 on 3. Thank you guys for joining. And thank you to Lydia, who had to step out a little early, but she got to talk a little bit of Rangers. That'll just about do it for us, but 5 on 3 will be back with a new episode next week, so stay tuned. 5 on 3 is a production of WFUV Sports. Thank you.